listening to Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth.
I'm in a mischievous mood tonight. I don't know what's going to happen tonight. So this is Journeys with JP on Wolf Spirit Radio, on Revolution Radio, on Ever Beyond Radio, also on No Borders Radio. What a network it is. It's also completely free and downloadable, organic, homegrown, 100% pure minced human being. And tonight we're joined first of all by Walt Silver and Nancy Hopkins, but more of that later, because this week is a very special week for us here living in Scotland. It's a very important week. It's the week where Scotland, for some reason, gets to secede from the British Union without a drop of blood being spilt. I mean, you guys had to, you know, really work hard for it. But we just said, can we ask our people if they want to secede? And then somehow they said yes. Anyway, so the big story. So it's on Thursday, and there's a big thing, and it's incredibly divisive, because there's all these people, and some people are worried, and some people are positive, and some people are, and there's a whole yes to independence and no to independence, no to breaking up. So to that end, I have a little clip here which I'd like to roll. It's about 10 minutes. It comes from John Oliver from the Daily Show team. Make sure that you've got your microphones muted, Walt and Nancy. I hope that you do. This is John Oliver on all about what the Scottish referendum's all about. So enjoy this. It's a light-hearted but quite accurately placed.
Scotland will vote this week on whether to leave the United Kingdom.
For the first time in modern history, London could be at risk of losing control of Scotland. It could become its own country.
Yes, it seems like England may lose yet another country. And look, I'm not saying the sun is setting on the British Empire. Let's just say the restaurant of history is switching to its dinner menu. Now, there is a lot to explain here, especially because when most American people think about Scottish independence, they tend to picture this.
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
Oh yes, nothing screams Scottish freedom quite like a millionaire Australian anti-Semite on horseback. So let me bring you up to date here. Scotland is currently a member of the United Kingdom, which is not a country. It's actually a complicated political and economic union. Think of it as an archipelagic supergroup comprised of four variously willing members. And to understand why Scotland may want to leave, you really need to understand the history of its relationship with England.
For centuries, England and Scotland remained separate and frequently at war. But in 1707, they formed a single country, Great Britain, a decision that's been controversial in Scotland ever since.
Oh, yeah. I'd say it's still controversial. Given that, as you can see here, we are still role-playing with wooden swords to try and emotionally work through it. So Scotland and England have been involved in something of a 300-year arranged marriage. And look, I will be the first one to acknowledge England has been a little bit of a dick since the honeymoon. In 1746, we actually banned the kilt just because we knew they liked it. And then we chose God Save the King as the UK's national anthem, a song which at one point had a verse referencing rebellious Scots to crush. Although, to be fair, We later realised that that was wrong and replaced it with a line about pissing on the Welsh. But 2.5 years ago, it was announced that Scotland would finally get to vote on its independence. And since then, there has been a spirited campaign.
There are two campaigns. Yes, Scotland, backed by the SNP and the Scottish Greens, and Better Together.
OK, for a start, Better Together is not a great name for a campaign. It sounds like what people say to convince themselves to stay in a dead marriage. Look, I'm not saying we're good together, Marion, I'm saying we're better together. Tax-wise, it's preferable to the alternative. Why are you crying, Marion? I'm saying something nice. And if you think their name is uninspiring, wait until you hear their slogan.
No thanks. No thanks.
No thanks.
No thanks.
No thanks is a violently British way to refuse something. That is just one step away from, oh, I couldn't possibly. But what's even more interesting here is who is helping fund these two campaigns.
Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling wants Scotland to stay part of the UK. Rowling has donated $1.6 million to the Better Together campaign.
Yep, but that's not really a surprise, is it? She famously wrote a book where a redhead played second fiddle to a magical Englishman. Come along, Ron, come along. I shall have all the powers and your brothers can die fighting my wars. Come along, come along. Meanwhile, the opposing side has received 80% of its funding from these two people.
Jackpot. A Scottish couple scoop £161 million on the lottery, making them Europe's biggest ever winners.
That's right. The pro-independence campaign is predominantly financed by lottery winners. They're like an adorable Scottish version of the Koch brothers. So let's just look at the two arguments. First, the case in favour of Scottish independence.
We can take matters into Scottish hands. No one, absolutely no one, will run the affairs of this country better than the people who live and work in Scotland.
And to be fair, he might be right about that. Scots know how to run a country. Because when they got to choose a national animal, they selected, and I swear this is true, a unicorn. Who knew you were allowed to do that? Pick a fictional animal. Yeah. America's probably kicking itself for choosing the bald eagle now, aren't you? You could have picked a Wookiee in a top hat, or whatever the f*** Grimace is. Look, he looks like a magic genie granted a wish to Gorbachev's birthmark. But and also, for their national flower, the Scots chose a thistle. That is a plant made out of tiny knives and a throwing star. The only flower I like is a flower that could pierce an Englishman's throat. And look, there are legitimate reasons for Scotland to want to govern itself. For instance, it's a predominantly liberal country which has frequently been governed by a conservative UK government. And seldom has that divide been more pronounced than right now, when the UK's Prime Minister is David Cameron.
Cameron's problem is that as a posh southern Tory, he's seen in Scotland as the personification of everything that's wrong with England and the UK.
Yeah, I agree with that. He embodies all the things I hate most about England, and I'm English. Let me prove this to you. This is a picture of him as a student at Oxford. He's in fucking tails. Now, Cameron says he's desperately embarrassed by that photo, which is why it pains me so much to be showing it to you. Can we get a close-up on his face? Because that is the face of a man who fast-forwards through the servant parts of Downton Abbey. Just... Who cares what's happening downstairs? Let's just hope the soup doesn't get cold. In fact, let me show you what an asshole David Cameron is. One of the biggest issues in the independence debate concerns the fact that Scotland has a surprisingly large amount of oil. But watch how David Cameron responded to a simple parliamentary question about who should control revenues from it.
A poll last week showed that 68% of Scots want oil revenues devolved to Scotland. Does the Prime Minister agree with 68% of Scots, or does he not?
If you ask a stupid question, you get a stupid answer.
Imagine that sound for 300 years, and it gives you some sense of why Scotland may be ready to leave. Okay, so let's look at the anti-independence campaign now. Clearly, they had some serious work to do. Unfortunately, their attempts to win hearts and minds involved this controversial commercial targeted at women, featuring a Scottish mother confused by the whole concept of independence, who has just sent her kids off to school.
Best time of the day, this. When they're all out, nice and quiet. Gives you time to think. Helps you clear your head. Shame it only lasts for 2 minutes. Don't get me wrong. I know how important this vote is. There's not much time left for me to make a decision. But there's only so many hours in the day.
Oh, it's so confusing. It hurts my wee head. I'm just a woman, you know, just a pair of ovaries and some bangs. How do I possibly have the mental capacity to pick from one of two options? Put me down for a no and never trust me with an important decision again. What's crazy about this? The crazy thing about this is that the anti-independence side actually has some legitimate arguments to make. Leaving the UK could potentially have some serious consequences for Scotland.
If they vote for independence, Scots have been warned that they risk losing the pound as their currency.
Yeah, they could lose the pound, and that's not nothing. Because if they do, they'd either have to join the currently unstable euro or revert to Scotland's old currency, which I believe was sheep and threats. I'll give you 3 sheep for it and a punch in the face, so we have a f***ing deal. Why do they hate us? And also, while the pro-independence campaign has put a great deal of emphasis on Scotland's oil, there are genuine concerns over how much might actually be left.
Reserves are dwindling. The Office for Budget Responsibility expects the number of barrels produced to decline from 2 million a day in 2012 to just 500,000 in 2040.
And if that's true, that might be a problem. Because if you've ever been there, you will know that solar power is not an option for Scotland. So those are the two sides, and with the vote just days away, this thing is set to go down to the wire.
This morning, in shock, Brits woke up to headlines like these. Don't let me be the last queen of Scotland. Last stand to keep the union. A new poll for the UK's Sunday Times newspaper shows 51% of Scots plan to vote yes for independence.
And if it comes down to just one vote, we all know who will be called upon to break that tie. Go with your gut, Nessie. You do you, Nessie. You do you. It seems like...
So, there you go. Welcome to Journeys with Everybody. Everybody, this is Independence Week here in Scotland, and people are doing crazy stuff, all kinds of crazy stuff to join in with the incredibly divisory. Shall we become separate from this country that is just across the mountain on the other side of the hill, beyond that little wall? I don't know. Yeah, I just get the feeling that they want to treat Scotland like a kind of golf course, really. You know, somewhere you go to, but nothing. You know, not that people live there. Anyway, welcome to Journeys tonight. Is something happening? No, nothing's playing. Only me. Yeah. What is this you're playing? Oh right, I see. The clip came from a post. you can get it from my. From my Facebook, it's on the whole of it. There's the first 10 minutes of it. My Facebook, and indeed, I think I'll just paste it into the War Spirit Radio Facebook page so that you can catch on that. That's from John Oliver's show. John Oliver's a member of the Daily Show team, John Stewart. And he now has his own show, and I think he's an excellent comedian. He always makes me spit my tea and stuff. So, welcome to Journeys tonight, a kind of ragtag, Well, no, I don't want to be very rambling. Let's try and keep it focused because we got stuff to get down. I mean, we've been talking for the last couple of weeks about what I call Metatronics, despite my girlfriend telling me that Metatron is Lucifer and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it's all bad and all they say. Anyway, so it's all good stuff because you got to understand the nature of energy, and it's all about how you these are devices you can project your energy into. But there are certain kind of self-limiting situations with these devices and with the field in general. For instance, when the U.S. Secret Army, basically the story of the men who stare at goats, the backstory of that was that they discovered that whenever they went down to the really deep levels of meditation and they tried to do something that would cause harm, they got a feedback. You know, there was an instant feedback, and basically you couldn't do it. It would prevent harm from happening. So there's a certain kind of what's the word? Safety. Maybe I should open this question up, Walt. How do we stop people using the devices that we use for evil purposes? Let's start there, shall we?
Well, the answer is from my understanding, experience, and the things that I've studied, the answer is very simple, is the presence or absence of stagnant argon. If you read up on the work of Dr. Wilhelm Reich, who's the one who coined the term argon, he identified different degrees of argon. So argon was the natural, healthy, pulsing argon. DOR, DOR, stood for deadly argon radiation, which is what he described as what happens when argon is hyperstimulated by the presence of electrosmog, and then it becomes stagnant, which is, you know, life-depleting. That's the kind of situation when you've been sitting in front of a CRT for several hours and your eyes are burning and your mouth and your throat feel dry and you feel exhausted even though you slept 8 hours because you're in the presence of a stagnant argon field. He went on to do other experiments with argon and radiation, and he classified another type of argon, which he called Oranor, which is, I don't remember exactly what the letters stand for, but that's what got him into trouble, because when he combined that with one of his cloudbusters, he was able to bring down one of the UFOs run by the shadow government. So that brought a whole mountain of attention to him and his investigation. So that's why the poor man died in prison. But the why is it necessary to classify this? Why is it necessary to say, you know, this or that argon? Because it actually ties directly to your question. For and this was discovered early on by this gentleman, Don Croft, who started this grassroots movement called gifting, where people would go all over the country throwing what they would call power busters or sucker punch, which is where the little Dixie cups with resin and metal and some crystals, because you've heard of the ELF, the extra low frequency emissions, that they said that's why cell towers propped up, you know, practically overnight. You can't go into a city or a town without seeing 3 or 4 cell towers or more. And they claim that it's, oh, you know, better coverage and all that jazz. But in reality, part of that equipment is enabled to be used as ELF transmitters, which for those that have studied the subject, extra low frequency is what they can use to affect your mood. Either trigger your fight or flight reaction in you by using extra low frequency emissions. They can either depress you to be despondent and non-reactive, or they can whip you up to become violent. So these people went around the country putting organite near the towers. Why? Because for those emissions to actually work on you, they need the presence of a constant field of stagnant argon. you know, D-O-R, door. If the organ becomes nice and healthy, that emission has little or no effect whatsoever. The same can be said for the chemtrails. Chemtrails, one of the reasons they stay in the sky for so long is because there is stagnant argon in the sky, especially the sky over a city, where you have tremendous amounts of electrosmog, transmissions of all kinds, microwave transmissions. Yeah, the argon over a standing that's floating over a city is not going to be positive, even in the presence of sunlight. So when you transmute that argon into positive argon, the trails begin to dissipate very, very quickly. They dissolve completely. If they stay, they stay for a few minutes as opposed to extended period. So, and that's, and here we're talking environment-wise. The same thing happens with thought forms if you want to cast a spell or do voodoo or something, all that, you know, negative polarity type mental, spiritual, psychic work requires the presence of stagnant argon in order to move. It's the medium that it needs to be effective. But if the environment around you is of positive energy, it can have little or no effect. And at that point, if somebody says, oh, they cast a spell on you to kill you, well, if you are open to that reality and you agree to that reality, yeah, of course it will affect you because you are giving your consent. But if you constantly feel that, you know, you're safe, you're protected, and your energy around you is nice and healthy, there's no way for any of this to reach you. So, and I cannot speak for everyone's devices. I can only speak to mine, but since I combine the Sperling technology, which is constantly transmuting the spin of the energy from negative to positive, when I write the letters or the instructions for the users, I tell them you can't use these to hurt someone or to do something negative, because for that to work, you are reliant on a field of negative energy, and these things do the opposite. So even if you try to program a negative thought form or a negative intention in the device, it'll just dissolve. It won't have any results at all. So that's there's another way to prove this. For example, if you are using your dowsing tools, if you're in the presence of someone who is extremely depressed or very angry or maybe violent, and you just scan their energy field, their auric field, for argon polarity, you'll see that 90% of what they're giving off is actually negative argon. And so if you put something in their environment that transmutes that, it has no way but to dissipate, because now you're taking away the main ingredient for this negativity to do its work in that environment. So, like I said, I can't speak for other people's devices because I have not studied them at depth, but I can speak to mine that if you're thinking of using them for negative purposes, don't waste your money or your time because it won't work. You need to gather, you know, negative elements for that. And that's why you see talismans, you know, they're made of things like, you know, desiccated blood and soil from a cemetery and stuff like that.
Ear of bats, eye of newt, and all of these things. And so yeah, so there's a question that's formed in my mind, and I don't know if anybody out there is thinking this question, but we talk about argon. Is there a measure? Is there a way? Basically, look, I just want to see it on video. All right, is there a way of taking a picture of something that is argon flowing and see it on video? You know, is there an argon video camera? There you go. Well, this is the big question of the night.
Well, that's one of the things another experiment that I have to do. I have the blueprints for an organoscope. One of the things that Reich did, he put together a device. It looks like a basic telescope, but the visual element at the end is a combination of, at the time he did not work with resin, he worked with cellulose, because you need the presence of an organic material to be the accumulator for the argon, and then you need a metallic material to do the work of pushing it, of ejecting it. So at the entry point of this telescope looking device, he's got a membrane of cellulose and a mesh, a steel mesh, and then he's got a couple of lenses focused on that. And what happens is, when you look through this device and you're looking at something, at a plant, for example, you actually get to see like the aura of the plant, a subtle light field around the plant, so you can actually see the organ. And he, when one of the people that he shared this with was Einstein himself. He went to visit Einstein at wherever he was living at the time, and I don't know if we can call him a handler, but Einstein, one of his assistants, was, you know, one of these fellows who's connected to the government. And Reich visited Einstein with an organoscope, with several accumulators, and left them for Einstein to inspect and analyze and investigate. And he never heard again from Einstein. And despite repeated efforts by him and people in his office, he could not get them to return the equipment that he took with him to show Einstein. Mysteriously disappeared. So I don't see why not, you know, why one could not put one together and then just use a video camera to film through it. Call me lazy. I haven't put one together yet.
So, we have methods of focusing it, methods of generating it, and methods of videoing it. That's really interesting.
Do you know one of the times in history that argon was actually video recorded? If you remember, many people have mentioned this. Remember, I know that many people say that man never went to the moon and all that stuff, but there was an excellent video that was done, not the first moon landing, but there was another moon landing when they took a lot of video, and you see one of the astronauts, he's standing near the module, and then with a little jumping gait, he moves away from the module. And in the beginning, I thought it was just an effect of the sunlight, but you see this kind of iridescent halo following the contour of the spacesuit as the astronaut is moving across the screen. You see like this very, very soft multicolored vapor, like a iridescent type rainbow thing following the body of the astronaut. And what happened is, that was one of the verifications. I don't know if they were aware of it, but they were actually verifying one of the findings that Dr. Reich found, that in a vacuum, argon becomes luminescent when excited by electromagnetic waves. So here they're in the vacuum of the surface of the moon, and the spacesuit is fitted with radio equipment so that they can communicate, you know, with the module and with the Earth. So the argon of the astronaut's aura of his body is being excited by the radio signal, and it's becoming luminescent to the camera, so the camera is able to pick it up.
Now, what I picked up on that, what kind of it is, you're essentially saying this is the same as Kielin photography. If you take it in a vacuum, you can see the glow if you apply an electromagnetic wave to it. What was the frequency of that wave?
I don't know what carrier waves we're using in the space program.
The one that made the thing glow blue. So you see, because that, I think that, I mean, these are little facts. These things to me are important because they give us the frequencies that we can. I suppose in a way that's a probably dangerous information as well. perhaps we're not very really. No, but really, we've been talking. You know, last week we were talking. There was some very, very important information given out last week. It would behoove anybody to listen to last week's show, Journeys with JP, with featuring Shari Edwards. It'd be worthwhile subscribing to an archive. Indeed.
It's, her work is really important because she moved, she made a giant leap from Dr. Rife's work. I built my own Rife machine and used it for years, and I was witness to my own healings and other people's healing because of it. But one of the things that limited me is at the time I had to rely on existing catalogs of frequencies for different ailments, and I had to keep trying until I hit the nail on the head. She has leapt forward to the point where she can actually scan for what frequency is needed. She doesn't need to know what the person needs. She just by listening to the sounds the person is producing, the full spectrum of frequencies coming out of their voice, she can actually pinpoint, okay, this person has this ailment, and so what they need is this. So that's quite a leap forward from the initial. There was somebody in Australia working on a frequency detector just for that, that could analyze what you needed, depending on your ailment. But it worked with a couple of handles that you had to hold, and it was a very expensive device. I had no access to it. I think the gentleman was asking for something like $2,000 or $3,000 for it. But that was being developed in Australia. So her work, I think, is...
Walt, are you there? Have I lost you? Oh, God. Okay. Who have I lost? I've lost somebody there. Over there. There we are. Yes, I know. Okay. Cancel this. Stop that. Oh, God. Right, okay. Whatever. Let's see. I'll call everybody back. Until I get there. Call the group. And we're back on the air. Sorry about that. Seems to have got a little there. And we're just going to bring back Walt and Nancy. We'll come back into the call any second now. Everybody should be back online on the various stations. Oh, busy? No, don't be busy. Just call me. Just call me. Just call me. Come on a different call. Anyway, Well, anyone there? Oh, Nancy, you back?
Yeah, I got knocked off, I guess.
Yes. Stuff like... Oh, sorry. God.
And again, knocked off.
Yeah. All right. So, Nancy, you're back. We haven't got one. Well, we've lost Walt for the moment, but he'll come back in. Yeah, so there's a bit of a tide. There's a bit of a tide on the internet tonight, I think. We'll see what happens. We were talking about frequencies and Rife, Royal Rife. In your electronic warfare experience, Nancy, were you dealing at all with specific frequencies? Were you guys experimenting on people to see what frequencies would affect them, or was that the whole area not? Where were you at with it? How advanced were you?
Well, we were definitely. I mean, a signal is not just a frequency. A signal carries all sorts of information with it if you know how to break it back. Any signal that is going through any area can be modulated by frequencies within that area. So like one of the most stunning things that occurred was when when I found out about the Russians being, or the Soviets being able to get a radar signal coming off of one of our planes, and because of the ability to break back the additional modulation that was on the signal, they'd actually be able to determine what engine was being used inside the plane, and therefore identify the plane, therefore identify the unit. So we were extremely, that's where the ball game is the frequency.
That's impressive, though, isn't it? That takes some really smart thinking to, like, because it's modulating, very multidimensional thinking.
Well, the Russians were the best, or Soviets were the best at it. I mean, when I first got into my job, part of the requirement that was not being fulfilled, because nobody had actually been in my job before, it was to determine the threat against the American forces. And so one of the things that they kept saying throughout all of the literature in the intelligence world was that, oh, yeah, well, these Soviets, they're pretty good at a lot of things, but the reality of it is that they're nowhere near as good as we are. And they never said that after I was there, because I proved that they are the best in the world at electronic warfare and the concepts of, for a lot of reasons. They got burnt in World War I, and they never lost that, that learning curve. And so they could do things that... I see at my job, I was responsible for knowing what the Soviets did in other countries, but I had no need to know what the Americans were doing. So, I mean, they could have been better, but I wouldn't have even known it. All I know is that the Soviets could do things that would beat the Americans hands down in any kind of a confrontation in Europe, particularly. They were that good at it. But what happened was that as we looked at the problem, or looked at the concepts behind electromagnetic warfare, there were things that were we could do that at the time was considered top secret plus, which I don't know, maybe it is still. Maybe I could get burned for talking about this, but it's basically the idea that all of these electromagnetic waves that are out there are very real things. They carry real, real intelligence. A telephone call, for instance, our analysts would listen to the telephone calls of our own troops and be able to break back entire campaigns based on what they're hearing from this guy over here and this guy over here and that guy over here. You didn't have to see one person telling the whole story. You could pick it out of, just what was being said on a telephone. Well, the same thing happens in any kind of an electromagnetic environment. Depending on what radar you had in the battlefield, you knew which unit was attached to that radar. So you could basically see a battlefield based on the electromagnetic signature of it. Then it would get into the strategic element, where you had the embassy in Washington, the Soviet embassy in Washington, that the FBI was always watching it and taking pictures. And I'm trying to do this. I was researching for a briefing, and I'm looking at the roof of the embassy from pictures of the FBI, and I went, what's wrong with this? And then I brought back up some other ones, and I'm going, the damn skylights are moving all over the roof. And they weren't skylights, they were actually antenna systems. And they would move them and position them in a place where they could more easily be able to intercept a particular signal that they were, wanting to listen to at that time. It was pretty interesting.
So what was the frequency that they were tuning in on?
Oh, it would depend. Because it was within the radio communication frequencies. It would be like the signals being sent out by Cuba or the Soviets or the Cubans or the Americans so these antennas, it wasn't so much the frequency, because they're all within that, they could all gather all the frequencies with the antennas. We're not talking high frequency, that takes a totally different antenna system, but normal communications. But it was the positioning of it. You had to position the antenna to be able to pick some of these things up, because they were very directional, and they were very...
They have a toroidal field, like everything.
Yeah, they had to pick up the field. So that's why they were moving them around, not because of frequency adjustments, but because of positioning. But then what happened, which is one of the more interesting situations, was that the same concept of any energy flowing through an area can be modulated, can be altered, can be changed, and it picks up this excess energy. And if you know what the carrier wave, what that original frequency was, then you can take off all this other stuff. And because of the sophistication of the computers that was getting going in the 70s and the 80s, at that point in time, you could read back all sorts of stuff that was...
So you're talking about using basically a short-form radar and the reflection that it got back, you could decode and demodulate speech that was coming back that was in the field of this radar. Is that what you were doing?
Not with radar. Not with radar. Radar is not...
Well, when I'm saying, because it's like, it would be sonar, but it's not. It's because
it's actually microwave.
So it's a radio wave thing, microwave. Microdar or something.
It's microwave. And what happened was that I got a call from somebody in my higher command, and they wanted, the State Department was all freaked out because they suddenly had realized that a very, very large percentage of the people that had been at the Soviet embassy in Moscow, the United States embassy, but in Moscow, had been stationed there, were coming down with cancer. And they wanted to know, you know, was there something that the Soviets could be doing that would be causing this cancer? And by then, because I was also the safety officer for the unit, I said, yeah, they could be and probably do have microwave signals going through the embassy. And those things, they're doing it for intelligence, I said, but, you know, I believe that those are in frequencies that can be damaging to the human being. So I said, get NSA to go in and do a microwave sweep of the embassy, and they did. And they did find, I know they found one because I got a call back from the guy who was very kind to call me back. And he said that they had found one in the central seal that was in the main conference room of the embassy. And I said, you got to look deeper. I said, there's got to be more. I said, and the fact of the matter is the Soviets had built the building. So they could have been all through the building. And, so they found them, and that was, but now that particular episode is written up in textbooks, and the Soviets are being accused of attempting to create cancer within these people. And that's not what it was at all. It was an intelligence operation. They would send the microwave carrier signal through the building, and there would be receptors to pick it up, you know, on the other side. And the changes that were seen in the signal, was audible voice in most cases. So they could actually break back what was being spoken inside a room simply by energizing the room and then, you know, receiving and comparing it to what was sent out to what you got, and that's the voice, and now we
exactly.
put it to the computer.
Exactly, demodulating the reflections from the void, the movement of air. This is what it's picking up. It's picking up the movement of air, or the vibration of the body as it disturbs the radio standing wave. Quite incredible.
But it is vibration. It's changing the energy, you know.
That's right. It changes so the standing wave.
Yeah.
Awesome. So anyway, that was when you and this was the kind of the trigger for it, is that you noticed that they were getting ill and realized that they were getting sick from, so they were basically having sort of mega Wi-Fi sensitivity going on.
Oh sure, absolutely. That's after that I actually, when I got out of the military, I started to start up a business to be able to go into meter homes and say, look, at you, if you just do this, you're going to change your electromagnetic, it's not going to feel so bad to you, it's not going to be as bad for you. And I mean, I really worked to try to get people interested, but nobody wanted to listen to me. And you know, how far from the 80s are we now? And everybody's like, you know, I think there might be a problem here. Yeah, there is a problem. My brother died of a brain tumor because he was on the first analog phones that they had out there, which were much worse than the digital. And he worked in radar. And, you know, so, I mean, I understand this at a very gut level of what the consequences are for people ignoring this. And that's why Shungite in particular, that it can actually see, it's doing exactly what the other energies are doing. It's putting out an energy that is manipulating that carrier frequency of death and destruction, cellular death and destruction, and it's changing it to be healing and enlightening. There's no big mystery here. I mean, there's no mystery. We've been playing this electronic game for, you know, since I was in the 70s, and it was vastly, you know, it goes all the way back to World War I when this all started up. So it's not that people don't understand it. They just don't want you guys to know it. If you know it, then you're going to understand what they're doing to your head, because you don't think your head is vibrating to these invisible vibrations? Think again. Your energy.
Think about the metal that is in your head. You know, all the mercury fillings, all the aluminium or aluminum that you've been eating your, you know, we're completely awash with aluminium. Wolf Baby has been doing a lot of research recently about all this toxins, and turns out that aluminium is the third most common element on the planet, and yet no living creature uses it in its metabolism. Isn't that interesting? What's Walt, are you back with us? No, he's not.
Yes, I'm back.
Oh, you are.
My mic was muted.
Yeah. So, what's your take on aluminum? And it's,
well, I know that what I know of aluminum is what Dr. Huldah Clark says in her book, The Cures for All Diseases, where she prescribes not consuming commercial salt, because they put a aluminum compound in it to keep it from clumping, and that goes straight to the brain. So according to her, it affects your brain. I mean, I haven't used commercial salt for years. We buy the ground Himalayan salt, but that was my understanding, is that it affects your brain.
So
I don't know specifically.
Just think about it. If it's something that can crumble into tiny little flakes, and you know, that little flake would be like a little blade. And not only would it be a blade, it will also be a wire. So it might short out your nerve endings. You know, it might have an electric effect on it. And also store charge. Go ahead.
You're thinking in terms of physical damage, but I'm thinking along a different line. Knowing how everything everything has to do with everything else, and we know we're in a system of domination and control, and they're always coming up with newer and newer ways of controlling people's emotions and thoughts. Think about it. They have a perfect excuse for putting aluminum in salt, which is what you consume every day in your meals, right? Well, now that this aluminum is in your brain, they can resonate it, and your whole brain becomes an antenna.
Exactly. Are we getting out? Hello, hello, hello. Testing 1, 2, 3.
Time to take out the aluminum foil hat, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. So, yeah, that's the thing. Now, Wolf Baby been doing research. She's quite good at digging. She's, you know, she, like all wolf babies, are very good at digging. Has discovered that there's a link between, and get this, if you have aluminium in your body, there's no problem until you start ingesting fluoride. Fluoride opens the gates for aluminium toxicity. Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting?
The with aluminum presence in your body, and let's say mercury and lead, for example, ozonated steam bath is a way to get rid of them. Because the for those that have studied ozone therapy, done correctly, not with ambient air, but with pure oxygen, as you would get from a tank or an oxygen concentrator. And with an oxygen concentrator, I think the best you can get is 98% because you have to set it for the lowest possible flow. In my concentrator, the lowest flow I can get is a quarter of a liter per minute flow. When you're in the steam bath, and water is like a magnet for ozone, your pores open up and you start sweating, and your skin begins to absorb the ozone. And if you have heavy metal toxicity in the body, or I know aluminum is not considered a heavy metal, but one of the good things about it is that it oxidizes extremely fast. The ozone will oxidize mercury, will oxidize lead, and you'll sweat it off. Your body will begin to sweat off the metal. So doing an ozonated steam bath at least once a week, little by little, you'll start shedding all this metal toxicity in your body. And people are not allowed to know this because they just treat you for heavy metal poisoning. You know, they don't give you what you need to get rid of it.
So there's probably also... now, there's an interesting little story. I was in the hot tub one day, and I met this Dutch lady who was also in the hot tub. We didn't introduce ourselves. But, yeah,
I like
really.
The way that...
Yeah, that's how the story starts, eh? One day, I was in a hot tub. Anyway, so I started talking to this lady, and because it was just her and I in the middle of nowhere, you know. And she told me the story about how she'd been poisoned by something, maybe rat poison or something like that, and that it was basically arsenic poisoning. And indeed, she looked pretty terrible. You know, she was a very, you know, she was a shade of grey in her skin, mm-hmm. Not. You know, not in good shape. So I said, okay, come along to my studio the next day and we'll find a frequency for you. So along she came, and having you know dried and put clothes on, I used the Shari Edwards method, which is basically what you do is you record the sound of somebody's voice. You record somebody's voice and run it through a spectrograph, a spectral analyzer, and basically that's like a kind of it gathers statistics about the frequencies in the voice. And if you have a line that is smooth, that isn't too kind of uppy downy, and is more or less sort of focused on very unpointy or untrophy. There's no peaks and no troughs in it. Then you're essentially quite a healthy person. That's what they found. And when somebody has an issue, the more intense that issue, the more one frequency will be focused on. And indeed, if you're poisoned by something, it's in your system and it rings like a bell. You know, it's like whang. You can see it. And it sticks out like a very, very sore thumb, and it also sticks out on other octaves. So you see the same frequency bouncing down. You see where the major one is. And then what you do is, if there's something that is excessive, what you do is you give the reciprocal frequency, the tritone of the frequency, back to the person. And so I did this, the second I did it, there was a very significant peak in her graph, as I was saying, so I gave her the frequency, and I did something that was almost close, you know, close to it, and she felt a movement in her body the second this frequency came on, I gave it a little bit more tuning. I just kind of tweezed it out a bit, and the second frequency gave. I mean, she could say. She said, "I can feel it leaving my cells." It was like there's this whole kind of flowing motion. So there's this, you know, I still get the picture of it, which is like this, you know, thousands of droplets squeezing out and being ejected from every cell. You know. From this frequency, and it took her a while actually for the whole thing to go, about 18 months. And 18 months later, she called me up, and I've been, you know, living in a different place. She managed to track me down and called me on the phone and said thank you very much, because that was that's what got her through, is this frequency that ejected the poison. So
you gave her a session of acoustic homeopathy.
Yes, essentially.
Did you only have to do it the one time, Jay, or did you have to do it multiple times?
You only need to do it once, you see, because I know it's really bad for business. you give a sample. Oh, yeah, okay, thanks. The sample works, and they don't need anything. You know, thank you very much. Bye-bye. But, you know, it's good to pay it forward. Anyway, so she hasn't. I've not heard anybody. No, she's not recommended anybody yet. But yeah, I can do this, and indeed, Shari, you can do it. And what I want is for people to learn from Shari how to do this, because this is the way we can all heal ourselves. It's really, really right. Like, it's a no-brainer how this works. If you stop using your brain for trying to think. Anyway, long story.
Well, you know, the basis of this frequency thing is so intriguing because back in the 90s, I started working with gemstone elixirs. And it's based sort of like on homeopathy. And people who don't understand homeopathy, well, it's easy because it's very strange. But what you do is you take a piece of a leaf and you put it in water and you soak it, and then you take only 10 drops out of that thing, and then you go and you make a 10 times homeopathic thing, and the farther you get away from your original water with the soaking of the leaf, the more powerful it becomes because you're getting the essence of the energy. Well, the gemstone elixirs were very interesting in that you would basically let the energy of the stone, whatever it was, like say a ruby, get into the water, and then you would have a formula that is vibrating at the ruby energy. And so there was... Oh, we got a phone on break?
Yes, yes. Don't go away. Hold that thought, Nancy, and within...
Blue Steel 44. Yes, I am. I think I'll go downtown. I'm gonna buy me a Blue Steel 44. That's a big gun, you know. Well, I said, hey, Joe, where you going with that gun in your hand? Gun in your hand now. I'm gonna take that gun, I'm gonna shoot my woman. I caught her out.
Okay, so we got the cosmic noises coming in here. Somebody's got the speakers on and their mic. Very cosmic indeed. Welcome back.
I'm not
to Journeys. That's better. Welcome back to Journeys with JP and Walt and Nancy and cosmic beings. And apparently we're really big on Alpha Centauri. Anyway, so Nancy, do you want to pull the pin out? Or can you remember where you put it?
Yeah.
Has there been too much aluminium in your bloodstream?
No, but that song was really bizarre. I got to tell you, I'm kind of like still shocky from whatever you had playing. I'm going to get a gun and shoot my woman? What the heck is that about?
That's the original version of Hey Joe.
Well,
which is
I don't think I like it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Strange. I don't know. It just came up and.
Music terrorism. Walt just put. Yeah, me. I'm there. Okay. Yes, we were talking about energy and healing. See, that's what that music is very disconcerting. You know, it's like people underestimate what music does. You know, I mean, I don't like to listen to it because I find it muddles my brain. It's like I find myself analyzing what the heck it's doing and saying, and it's not just the sounds, it's the energy. And, you know, so I find that it's very kind of appropriate that you played something like that, in that it made me stop to think about, you know, just the concept of music energy. But we were talking about mineral energy and the frequencies that, what's her name? I'm sorry.
Sherry Edwards.
Sherry Edwards. I'm sorry. Because during the 90s, we started playing with these gem elixirs that were basically the energy, and well, we finally found out how to keep them from deteriorating. We even in pure alcohol, we were still having stuff growing, this stuff that nobody had seen before in a matter of, you know, hours. It was the nuttiest thing, but we finally found a way to stabilize it. And so you could take and you could find out, well, what is it? What are the ailments? There's actually charts for this. What are the ailments that somebody has, and what energy will work on those particular ailments? And so you would take, and you would take a little bit of ruby and whatever else was required, and you'd put it in a glass jar, a small one, you know, like they used to use for cocaine, you know, those things, those little cocaine carriers. Well, we would use them for energy carriers, and all you'd have to do is put this thing in your pocket. And the energies would be healing like these frequencies. So now, you know, 4 decades into the future or whatever we're at, now you've got a situation where Sherry is actually able to find out what those frequencies are. You don't even need the minerals. You don't need the herbal help. It's the frequency. And, you know, that is a pretty awesome, you know, thought. And
isn't it?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Isn't it? It is a pretty awesome thought. Not only that, is that it's possible, therefore, to synthesize things that you might think that you can't have, like gold and diamonds and things like that. You just have the number of it. And what's weird is that the numbers start looking, they develop patterns that look like the thing that you're talking about.
The numbers?
Yeah, the way that the patterns of the numbers in when you're describing the frequency of certain elements and things like that, there's a reflection in the geometry and the numbers. Now, I just want to say that that song has a geometry that is weird, and it's what's called the cycle of fifths, which is why it is disturbing, because it's a bit like one of those Escher. You know these Escher paintings where you see a staircase that goes up and it 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 ends up underneath where it started? Apparently there's a building somewhere that actually has one of these things. Yeah, the chord structure of that song does do something weird musically and consciously as well. But yeah, it's a story of the crime of passion, of jealousy and heartbreak and revenge. All those lower things, definitely. But interesting, nevertheless.
Yeah, so energy is the key to everything, and if you understand that, you know, well, you know, we've talked about this before, that at the DNA level, your actual DNA will vibrate based on what kind of energies are in your field. But the most potent vibration to affect DNA is the human voice itself. So people have got to really grasp that everything they say is a power, not only affecting those around you, but affecting your own beingness. So when we're screaming and hollering and cursing, it may seem like that's what we need to do, but the end result is that you're really doing damage, even if it's not in your head. You know, sometimes I just go, what the, yada, da, dee, da, da. And I'm really not upset. I'm just going through like the motions, but it's still the words. And I've started to understand that. So instead of doing that, you know, I just start yelling joy, 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 love, 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 to prevent that, because I myself did not understand, you know, the full implications of the power that just the voices in an energy universe.
And indeed, we call it cursing. Cussing. Yeah. So, meanwhile, so, on cussing and blessing, and frequencies, and you found things that were in the Russian embassy, you discovered that it was because they were making the mill that was the key to finding it. And so it was a kind of serendipitous discovery. Do you think that you would have found any other way?
You know, we've got this feedback, and it might be you. Walt, you're muted, right? Okay, I don't know. I mean,
Walt, are you there?
Walt?
Yeah, I muted my mic because you were talking.
Well, but did you hear?
Must be it must be Rev Radio. Hang on, let me just reconnect with the server and see if I can get them back.
Yeah, there's an echo in there.
Yeah, it's very bizarre.
It is.
Maybe it's Dave trying to get through. Hi, Dave. How are you, mate?
Ooh, it's a frequency. Ooh.
Yeah, it's coming back off the Rev Radio feed. I'm trying to get them out and. All right, we'll be back. Rev Radio will be back in 1 second. Call back. Call back. You stupid thing. Call. Right, now. There we go. So, hopefully we are back on the air. For Rev Radio listeners. Indeed. So, Walter, you there?
Hi, Commander.
Good. So, where were we, and did we interrupt you at some point?
No, Nancy was speaking.
Okay, so, Nancy, therefore.
Okay, I was speaking, but I'm not sure what we were talking about energy, as we always are talking about. Earlier, I Wolf Baby asked about, did I have any knowledge about the powers that be trying to work the earth grid. No, not specifically. I have never heard of any kind of a program or whatever. But again, I didn't have a need to know what the Americans were doing. But I will say this, that if I know this and you guys know this, then they know this, and certainly they're trying to do everything they can to manipulate it. And one of the, you know, this, and when we first started out before Shungite, we were discussing the pyramid project, People's Pyramid Project. And we were talking in terms of getting these small pyramids up all over the world so that Gaia would have an ability to connect with a different kind of a grid system that would be doused so that they would know they were on the area that should have a pyramid, but that we would be able to enhance Gaia's capabilities to do this. And what we have going with the spiral, the Shungite spiral that Walt has gotten for us, you know, it may be that this would replace the pyramid concept. If we could get these things out, that this is even a more... much more powerful way of providing another grid system for Gaia to protect the grid system that's already there. So it's just an idea, you know, that we can take this. We've gone from understanding minerals and understanding consciousness, and then with Walt's help, we've gone to a point of actually getting into devices that are working in a new scientific area to harness even more energy. So what I would like to do is to have Walt explain the dangers that some of this new technology has, because I've gone into it not, you know, just trusting Gaia and just following directions. But in reality, he told me that there were problems with people using Sperling's different designs and what could happen. So, Walt, could you just do us a favor and just tell people that, you know, they may have to consider some of these things if they want to play in the same game?
Yes. The information that I had gotten was that there were people out there who wanted to replicate what Sperling had done, but I guess when they were looking at the structures of the different devices that he put together, they were just looking at the metal, and they were thinking, oh, I can do this, I can twist the wire, and I can make this. But the physical devices that Sperling put together was just the tip of the iceberg. The true work is the argon work that is being done by the device. All his devices have the same attributes, is that they transmute energy from negative polarity to positive polarity, and that's why they can do what they do, and that's why I combined it with my devices, so that they would never deplete, that they would never need clearing or recharging or cleansing or any of that stuff. But at one point, and this, I don't have any particular details because I got this information secondhand from a dowser who knew Slim. But it appears that after Slim passed away, his widow associated with someone whose job was to assist her make these devices, because obviously she doesn't have the skills to do all this metal work. And this person was kind of copying these things on the side or selling them like they were the legitimate Slim Sperling devices. And some people actually got sick because the devices weren't properly made. And that's why I explained to you in the email, I think it's a fantastic idea to get the spiral out there and give out the measurements and have the people put it together. But either start learning dowsing or get the assistant to someone who's comfortable with dowsing, because you do need to douse for the argon polarities of the wire, so that when you put together the device, it will turn on for you. I found that I always use the flat chips. I try to find them from the batch. I try to find them as flat as possible so that they will have the most amount of physical contact with the metal plates. But everything has to be doused. You have to douse the polarity on the plate, and that has to be soldered in series with the polarity of the wire. And then, so you have one plate will be negative, one plate will be positive, and when you put the shungite in there, you have to put it in series, positive to negative, negative to positive. And then you feel the coil get cold as it turns on. If you don't do it correctly, well, it just not going to do anything for you. It's just going to be a piece of rock with a piece of wire. That's why, and I know in this dowser fellow, the people that had gotten sick from the rings. Because a properly made ring is positive on both faces of the plane that's comprised by the ring. But I guess, I don't know how they were making them, but they were making them incorrectly, so one side was negative, one side was positive. And the negative side is really negative. Slim Sperling, when he was experimenting, and he made the first prototype, which was made with a single piece of wire, he almost gave himself a heart attack. Because he lay down in his recliner and put the ring on his chest, only he had the negative side in contact with his chest, and he had to get up all of a sudden and throw it on the ground because he started getting severe palpitations, almost had a heart attack, because that was the negative side of the ring. So if a device isn't made properly, at best it's not going to work. At worst, you're going to get sick because it's been done incorrectly. I wouldn't even want to guess what an improperly made harmonizer would do. I guess it would be atrocious, because harmonizers have this huge
asteroidal field. I wouldn't want to be in a field that has a negative, you know, that's putting out a negative thing. Like the harmonizer I sent you, that's an example of something putting out a huge field. I wouldn't want to be in one of those if it's made improperly, putting out, you know, negative spin energy.
So, the dangers of having your coils wrapped the wrong way round. And having your coils wrapped the right way round, hopefully, is our caller from area code 870. Good afternoon, good evening, and what's your name, where you're from, and do you have a point or a question?
Yeah, I'm a Stardust Man on the chat. He's been around for a while, but anyway, I'm just kind of like wondering about like the receiver part, and JP, you may really relate to this. I'm kind of wondering is how your body's equipped to receive. You know, like you and Dave, you know, I remember you talking about how you grew your hair long. And, you know, you read those old articles about, you know, the Native Americans used in Vietnam and all that. And I remember you talking about, like, you know, it seemed like when your hair got out to a certain length, it just kept on growing but never got any longer, you know. And I'm just kind of wondering, like, what is the reception part of all that, you know? I mean, as different things about the human body, like, tune differently on being able to receive all that.
If you look at a hair on under a microscope, you can see it's a kind of spiral design on the inside of it. And indeed, you know, if you let hair do what it does, it tends to spiral around and form kind of ropes and strings and locks and stuff like that. So energy travels in spirals, and so tiny little hairs, you know, we have things that are hair as wide as a hair and carrying gigabytes per second of information. We call them fiber optic cables. They're thinner than a hair, so energy travels down these tubes and out. And Walt, do you have much experience with the you remember we were talking earlier about the orgone and the Keelian effects of recording that. What's the deal with hair? You know, and you're absolutely right. I grew my hair. Dave grew his hair. It helps you keep in the flow, I believe. My girlfriend's got the longest hair, you know.
Yeah, the strange thing is I didn't realize then, but I grew my hair at the same time, and I'm listening to the old talk in the past, and I mean, you and Dave, it sounds like we heard about the same thing. You know, it's like, you know, the Native Americans, they, you know, let's try them out, see if they work on this test, and they work great, and so let's cut their hair and put them in there, and then all of a sudden they couldn't do diddly, you know.
That's right. And indeed, one thing that happened is that I was speaking to Chief Two Dog, and one of the things that when a friend of yours dies, that's what you do. You cut some of your hair. So I did. it's rather untidy. But it doesn't matter because I don't go out anywhere. Nobody sees me. But yeah, having long hair, I definitely have a feeling of it. It's definitely something even though I don't have like massive long locks, you know, what I've got it has a positive effect being long and just being as it is, not tied up, not tight or anything like that.
Thank you.
what is it that the long hair is giving you? I may have lost something here. What are you saying? The long, how is the long hair benefiting you?
I think it's kind of like you know, you hear the old saying about, you know, a cat, you know, on the whiskers, and you cut that cat's whiskers out, and they go in that little, well, the little rat hole. They try and chase the mice, and they can't feel them, and they get there. So it's like a feeling. It's not so much the whiskers touching. It's kind of like it's like an antenna out there feeling an aura of your surroundings. I guess that's the best way to describe it I can think of.
And so, and that's why, and you feel the same thing happens when your hair is longer.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, it increases telepathy. It's it was even to the point in the early part of the 20th century. We're in the 21st. Early part of the 20th century, in the pre-Nazi Vril society, which comprised of a group of guys and a group of women, and the women were encouraged to grow their hair to enormously long proportions. I mean, like really, like down to the floor. One of the most famous, and you know, stunning looking, but also had a particular function. And they were able then to channel extraterrestrials, which enabled them to get the information that let them build the Nazi bells. So in some ways, some people you don't want to tune into. But that was their lot. And her name was Maria Orsic, and possibly also appeared as Semyase later, some people consider. But the secrets of anti-gravity were developed through some people growing their hair long.
I find it really interesting because when I was in the military and when I was doing the most long-range telepathy, I had very long hair. And now I say, well, I don't do it because I don't. It just doesn't happen, you know. But maybe it's because my hair is cut short.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep. I mean, I'd probably say totally, you know. Wolf Baby is very psychic. She's got very, very long hair. What about the bald aliens? Well, maybe, you know, in the old days, you used to have a walkie-talkie and the you know, the rubber, you know, the first CB radios, they had a 9 meter aerial, and then you could get one on their coil that was a quarter wave, and it was like about 8 feet long and fiberglass, and then they coiled it down, you get a three wave. Anyway, ended up as a rubber duck. But nowadays, the original mobile phones, they had a little rubber duck about half an inch long, and then eventually you didn't see the aerial anymore, because it was a coil that was coiled up inside the circuit board, and so and particularly as they get higher and higher frequencies, the aerials get smaller and smaller and smaller, and so if you want to tune into some of the lower frequency scalar energies, you need to grow your hair long or have some other means. Maybe you could borrow somebody's long hair. I don't know. Maybe you can build a hair transmitter with a group of people with long hair mixing with a group of people with short hair, all meditating together and transferring energy like a data center. That's
tin
crazy.
Tin hats. That's a substitute for long hair, tin hats. Seriously.
But here's the thing. Nothing makes foil better than aluminium, does it? Aluminium.
Say that again?
Foil.
Oh, foil, yes.
Aluminium, yes. Foil. That's another one I wanted to play. Oh, maybe I was playing it. It's a kind of unique substance because it's really easy to make foil, but they call it tin foil. You don't actually get much tin foil anymore, do you?
No, but you know the statement you made earlier about aluminum being activated by fluoride is kind of ironic because my understanding is that fluoride is a byproduct of the aluminum industry, and it's toxic, and so. Back in the 50s, 54, I think it was, this guy that was a member of whoever was president's cabinet convinced everybody that we should put the fluoride in the water. And his job before he'd gotten into the federal government, he was a lawyer for the aluminum industry. So, I mean, talk about absolute bizarre craziness. You've got aluminum companies giving us fluoride that we put in our water because it may help children's teeth. Of course, now they've decided that no, it actually gets in the kids' bones and then is very disruptive to all sorts of other things. But nobody wants to hear that. We're still taking all this toxic stuff and ingesting it. And the only other thing that fluoride is used for is rat poison. So why are we doing it? Well, because the Russians and the Nazis found out that if you put fluoride in the water, it creates a human being who is very docile because they can't think, because the connection of the pineal gland to their higher self, the fluoride wants to go right in that pineal gland and gum it all up. And so when it's all gummed up, the microcrystals of calcite that are in there, they can't even vibrate. So you feel no connection. You're not connected. So once you get that vibration going, then you throw off the fluoride and all the gunk. And that's one of the things that I think is what shungite does naturally. So that's why people that get on shungite say, the first thing they say to me is, I don't know what's happening, but I feel happy because they're connected. But aluminum industry creates the fluoride. Fluoride, one time I was watching a TV program, it was in local news, and they were showing how something had spilled, a chemical spill at the water treatment plant, and I said, I don't know, what is this about? And I actually clicked on it, and they're talking about this stuff that spilled, and it's eating the concrete, and oh my gosh, you know, and they say, oh, by the way, it's fluoride, and they're putting it in the water. And neither of the TV commentators thought that this was a bizarre situation. A chemical toxin being put into the water supply. They never even questioned it. You know, so... say it again?
If I understand it right, fluoride was also, that byproduct was also used as something else very desirable by the chemical industry as a pesticide for vegetables because it made a very good pesticide because it would stick to the leafy greens of vegetables. And, so when it rained, it wouldn't wash off.
Yeah, I mean, but if people would just, there's no way that you can lose the battle against fluoride because there is no scientific data that A, supports it as being something that is desirable. And if it is desirable because it does help the children's teeth, why am I being medicated to help somebody's kid's teeth? You're self-medicating the entire population? This is a crime. This is a crime. So, but it's the one thing that anybody, if you get out there and you want to be an activist and you want to make the most impact in your community, you get them to stop putting the fluoride in the water.
Well, I think all you need to do is just grab any toothpaste out there that's on the shelf and that has fluoride in it was just like almost like 99% of it. And read on the back of it, and it has a warning label on it saying, if you swallow more than a pea-sized amount of it, to contact the Poison Control Center,
He's telling you the truth. On the back of any toothpaste that's got fluoride in it, there's a warning. And they're talking about swallowing a pea's worth of this stuff. You take a kid, you give him fluoride toothpaste, and you watch how much he's swallowing. You're poisoning your child every time you use fluoride toothpaste. Get yourself in a position to think in terms of protecting your children. Never mind yourself, your children. And I don't want to get off on the soapbox because you know I can do that. But the Fluoride Alert Network. Is the people that, to me, are the, providing the best information on the problem. Fluoride Alert Network.
Have they got a website?
Yeah, I just don't know exactly. I can look
all right,
up here.
I suppose you could Google it, Fluoride Alert Network. Yeah, because, so here's the interesting thing. Again, I'm giving credit to Wolf Baby's research. I want to say this is my research, because she spends hours... Googling. She's, It's like, to me, Google's like, it's like a, you know, it's ubiquitous, but you know, it's a whole new discovery for, and it's you know, it's wonderful to see her, but she's going down some rabbit holes. Maybe.
Okay, it's the fluoridealert.org.
Thank you.
Fluoridealert.org. Thank you.
Good, good. So, yeah, so it's, so this is what she's been saying, that interestingly, this aluminium layer seems to comprise one third of the planet's surface. It's like the third most common element, and yet it doesn't compute. It doesn't belong in our bodies. But this is possibly why planet Earth is a hostile atmosphere, and one of the reasons why we don't really possibly belong here, is a thought. Or that the aluminium has been brought here. Well, what do you guys have any like connections with the elemental energy of what's going on here? And is anybody still here? Walt, are you on? Nancy?
Yes, I'm here.
Ah, you're both. Whether you're both muted.
Yeah, elementals, do you mean like, you know, the nature spirits?
Well, yes, in a way, the consciousness behind the spirit, behind the elements. Indeed, you know, we're talking about the consciousness behind Shungite, which has a very high level of consciousness. Oh, by the way, Walt, do people's consciousness indexes change?
Yes, they do, because I did it... one of the meetup groups where I attended, we did it as a test. I asked what was the average consciousness of the group, and they had a scheduled specific meditation that night. So I got a value, we wrote it down, and then everybody did. They were guided. It was a guided meditation which lasted about an hour. And after they were done, I went back to the chart and asked what was the average. So it was about like 2,000 points higher than before the meditation. So yes, where you are, where your point of attention is, yes, that most definitely affects your consciousness. That's why you hear Frank Jordan speaking of, you know, if your attention is in the frontal lobes of the brain, you get this very superficial beta frequency consciousness, and as you move back your attention inside your head to like the soul center or the psychic center, now your consciousness changes and it's vibrating at a different speed. So that's why he teaches, you know, get into the habit of keeping your attention inside the head so you're not affected so much by the world that surrounds you.
So, when we look at the consciousness, how do we... All right, so the question is, we were on the show last night on Wolf Spirit Radio, and we were, you had your machine out. Have you got your machine today, the one that measures?
Well, it's not a machine, it's just a chart.
All right, do you have your chart to hand?
I kept.
Because I'm just wondering, when you're talking about the consciousness of a group, it's not just you, Nancy, me. It's everybody who's listening. Every soul who's listening. And the
speaking about the three.
Oh, you can actually focus down on that.
Yeah, of course. It's just like, I mean, if you've ever done any dowsing, you know, everything is based on your question and the intention behind the question. The simpler it is, the more accurate the response.
Okay, so here's a question for you then. Could you give us a measurement of what our consciousness index is tonight? On two stages, because you measured last night and it was like 18,000. Am I correct? Is that right, Nancy?
For yourself.
For myself, but also that was the same as
the group. 60,000 was the group.
60,000. Right. Okay. So we were 60,000 last night. Could you measure it tonight?
Okay. So three of us or the gentleman that's online as well?
Well, everybody's here. This is the group. So, yeah, including...
So everybody listening.
Yeah. No, first of all, just this call, and then everybody listening, like if there's a difference, because...
Just lost father, so it's only the three of us.
It's just back to us, just you and me and Nancy.
Just to be clear, it's you're wanting the average consciousness of the group or the total consciousness of the group. I don't know which value is more... useful to you?
That's a very interesting question. I think
but yesterday it was total. It was total yesterday. So
let's do total, Let's do total.
Oh, okay.
Because that means, you know, if mine was 18, then someone, well, either you two, someone in you, either of you two, has to have like 25, 28 or something like that.
Or it's a combination. It's the combination of the group.
Maybe more, indeed.
18,
yeah.
But when we put us together, it's 60.
Yeah, yeah. And indeed, we may have other friends with us as well.
Yes. Ooh, we could expand it out and see what, you know, with our guides, what is the reading?
Isn't
that
fluoride ice cream. Oh, my God.
No, you know, but you asked about the elementals, and you're the guy that lives so close to Findhorn that, you know, maybe you've got more insight into it because you know the stories.
Well, yeah.
Well, tonight I'm getting 20,000.
20,000?
Yep.
20?
4000.
40,000. 40.
Someone's got a leak.
The brain drain. Well, maybe, you know, it may be, is it that, does it depend now? All right, can you now measure it for the audience and us? You know?
Well, I got one question before we do that.
Okay,
can it,
go.
Would the time of night have anything to do with it? Because we're actually taking the measurement at a different time of night. And we're on Revolution, whereas we were only on Wolf last time.
Everything touches everything else. That's one of your rules of reality.
Thank you. So we're kind of in a situation where even from day to day, it's not really a comparative, you know, experiment.
Well, it's since everything is a wave, waves can climb. They can spiral up. But even spiraling up, they will have a trough and they will have a peak. The only difference is that instead of moving flat across a fixed line, the wave could be going up. But even going up, yes, it'll be an ascending wave, but yes, it does have a peak, and it'll have a trough and a peak and a trough. But if you average these values, you will see the average will continue going up, as opposed to having a steady wave on a fixed level. Because the thing is that this is exactly what you do in I don't mean to get off the subject, but in hydrology, when you do the spill measurement of rivers, the spill measurement of rivers actually follows a sine wave, because they are affected by the 11-year cycle of the sun. It affects the spill volume of rivers, and they follow a sine wave. So our consciousness, you know, everything's... Didn't you just say everything is frequency in the universe? So... Our consciousness could be just another frequency wave out there in the universe, right?
Yeah. So really, to understand what might be happening, we'd have to have a lot of data points.
Correct. So you could have an ascending average or a descending average.
Right. We should probably think about this before we present it to the world.
Yeah, you got to be sure what we're measuring and in what according to what limitations, because you always have to limit something in order to measure it. And there are things like the, you know, Heisenberg. You can't measure everything.
It's not just necessarily the. We're measuring the intelligence field, but there's other fields that we could measure. Is there another one that might be something that we should be looking at versus the intelligence field.
I don't know. I mean, what other?
Well, that's what I'm asking.
What Cinderella elements do you think are
consciousness, compassion level? Compassion.
I mean, I don't know what your chart says. I know that you've got the energy, because last night we were talking about consciousness fields versus energy fields. And you could be one or the other. So maybe it shouldn't be so much consciousness as it should be energy.
Well, that it gives me separate values. When I made the first spiral, the one that you call Shanghai Spirit Spiral, it did give me two values, because first I asked what was the intensity of the field, and it said 16,000. Then I asked what is the consciousness level of this device, of this assembly, and it said 18,000. So it was able to differentiate two different elements of the same assembly.
That would be amplitude and frequency.
So the energy of it. Think about it in terms. In terms of dimensional domain, consciousness is way, way, way higher than just energy. In fact, you could say that energy is the body of consciousness. It's the same way that your soul is wearing this physical body that you use to interact with this dimension. Well, your consciousness harnesses energy to interact with different dimensions. I think consciousness, being what it is, must be like at the highest level dimension, and everything below it is what it uses to create reality.
So if we were to look at the conscious level of this group over a period of, like, okay, he does it every Monday, and then we have the one, because it's a different audience on the other days, but, you know, if we were to measure this, we'd make you come in and measure every single night, you know, then we'd have a database that might be meaningful. We could see that, you know, wow,
right,
we're really starting to, you know, we're getting more intelligent, more conscious, our level of consciousness is expanding.
And the ancient, one of the things that, remember I mentioned to you that book, The Dayspring of Youth by M? It's
yes.
Really interesting. It's this is, the information in it is all based on the ancient Eastern knowledge and philosophy, and they speak about atomic intelligences in the body. And one of the chapters covers how if you were to look at the spinal cord, at your spinal column, you could use that like a thermometer. You see when temperature goes up, the mercury in the thermometer goes up. And in the book, it explains that consciousness levels in the human being is actually reflected on the spinal column. The higher the consciousness of the person, you will find that the focus is going to be on a higher and higher chakra. And it also carried with it the warning that the higher the consciousness level, as it goes up, the opposition follows you as you're going up. So that's why a person that's progressing in the spiritual path might come across higher and higher challenges in its way up. But granted, all of this is in the context of these very ancient teachings. Nowadays, we're coming into a new awakening where we don't necessarily have to be tortured to death every single day in order to learn something. That's old programming, old agenda. Now we are starting to learn more and more that reality is what you make of it. And if you think you can progress and evolve without being hit over the head with a bat every day, then you won't be hit over the head with a bat every day. You will be able to progress, you know, peacefully and happily without so many challenges. In fact, we were talking about it with Diane this afternoon, that, you know, someone that she knows experienced a negative physical experience because this person is doing very high consciousness work, and he admitted that, you know, the higher you go in consciousness work, you always have to upgrade your protection. So something happened that there was a lap in his protection, and so he had to experience this negative, you know, physical event. But then again, you could argue this is an element of this person's reality. Is it really necessary that as you go higher, you have to encounter higher and higher obstacles? I don't know.
I don't think so. I'm with you that, you know, we're over this phase. But unfortunately, I'm seeing a lot of people that are getting hit that way. Well, both of us have lost our income, so to speak, and we're forced into drastic changes in the way that we are operating within the 3D. Now, was that a bad thing at the time? It was horrendous. Is it a good thing? Yes, it is.
Yes, because, most definitely.
You know, because now we've, you know, that was part of the manipulation to take us to a new level. And, yeah, it challenged us.
Stuck in that, hamster wheel.
Right. Now, did I want that or program it? Well, in a way, yes, because I knew I was in a job that was, I wasn't going anywhere in it. And I really did understand that my growing antagonism of spending the time driving back and forth to that, if nothing else, while I was there, it was fine. The company was falling apart. Wasn't falling apart, but they didn't have the business. So, as the office manager, I basically spent my time on Facebook and the computer. So, you know, for me, it was a beneficial job, but the driving was making me nuts. And so I realized I was programming. And at one point, I'm driving, and it was like awful driving again. And I realized that if I was going to work until I was the age of 70, which is what I figured I had to do financially, that I would have to make, like, you know, 1,000 more trips. And it was like, the thought of that just, you know, buckled me, and I was like, I can't do this. So it didn't surprise me at a metaphysical level when everything got taken down. And I had to, you know, basically start over again. And even though I knew I was probably I kept warning the shop manager, be careful of saying you don't want to work here anymore because you're going to close the shop down, and that's exactly what happened. But I knew I was, you know, partially to blame because I wasn't very happy there either. So, we can program these things and not realize that we're doing it unless we're very, you know, aware of who and what we are, and so many people are not. But the reality is that if we believe, as I believe, and I believe Walt does and Jay, is that we are protected by a creator God or creator gods or a source God or whatever we want to call it. I call it Gaia. I say there's a creator God called Gaia, and that she will protect me in every way possible. It's not something that I should worry about, because if she can't protect me, well, I certainly can't protect myself. And if Gaia does not exist, then what are we doing here? This is a no-win situation we're in. So if you can create your own reality, then just jump on the bandwagon. You know, put so much power into the concept of a creator God that will protect us from everything, that will create a reality that goes beyond anything that we might even think about. You know, get on the bandwagon. Let's create this reality. Because at the worst, we know we created a new reality. And maybe in the worst of creating a new reality, we have, in fact, created that creator God that will protect us from everything. See, it's one of those situations. Is she here now, or are we creating her? It's sort of like, I think it's some part both. She gets stronger as we get more in line with believing that she exists and that there's a reality that she can create that will just be mind-bending to us.
Yeah, and like the thing that I was discussing with you yesterday night, that, remember, I said to you, you know, we have all these people that are, they want dominion, to live in dominion with the earth and dominion with the earth, and I said to you, since the reality around us is what we project from the inside out, if you're not living in dominion with yourself, if you're not living in harmony, your low soul, your high soul, and all the pieces living in love and harmony, you'll never see it outside of you. So, in the ancient days, remember I mentioned to you that allegorical Native American story of, you know, I have these two wolves or two dogs fighting inside me, you know, who's going to win today? Well, that presents the situation that every day you're living an internal struggle. So if every day you have this internal struggle, you'll never see a peaceful world outside of you, because inside this is your reality, a time of constant struggle. And in ancient times, it makes sense that you would be subjected to terrible tests and trials and tribulations, because it was the only way to get the message to the low self.
That's it. Thank you very much, Walt and Nancy. This is Journeys. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Hey, Walt.
Have a great night.